You wanted the best and you got it. The hottest band in the land, Kiss.
Welcome to Kiss Week, Day 3. I'm Patrick Foster. My usual co-host Jim Linehan is not here this week, so we're diving into Kiss. Today, an album that closed an era. The original Kiss era lasted just 4 years, from 1974 to 1977. The era can be neatly broken up into two sections, each containing three studio albums and capped by a live record. In the first half were the self-titled debut album and Hotter Than Hell, February and October of 1974, respectively, and Dressed to Kill, March 1975, capped with Alive in September of the same year. The second era featured Destroyer and Rock and Roll Over, March and November of 1976, respectively, and Love Gun, June 1977, closed out with Alive 2, which hit the shops in October of 1977, just in time for Halloween. And, of course, Christmas. Love Gun, the original era's final studio album, is one of the band's very best, and it took the gut bucket rock and roll sound just about as far as it would go. 1977 was an enormously busy year for Kiss. They played nearly 40 shows over the first 75 days of the year, then decamped for Japan, where they played from mid-March till early April, finishing with a triumphant three-night stand at Budokan Hall in Tokyo. The original plan was to record a single-disc live album in Japan and release it shortly thereafter. That plan was scrapped and replaced with an idea to record another double live set, but one that would feature newer material. So when the band went into the studio in May with producer Eddie Kramer to record Love Gun, they knew that the songs they would record would feature heavily into their upcoming live album. Love Gun would be released on June 30th, and the tour to support it would begin on July 1. Hardly enough time for a demon or a star child to even catch their breath. Author Julian Gill, in his book Kings of the Nighttime World, summarizes the time nicely. By 1977, Gill writes, the Kiss business machine was in full swing, with merchandising becoming more and more an integral part of the organization. At the same time, the music reached a limit in terms of creativity, and band members factionalized, enjoying the benefits of their fame with a variety of vices. Love Gun was the final original album recorded by all the band members on the majority of tracks. It was also the first Kiss album to include all of the original members on lead vocals. Now, let's drop the needle on side one. Stanley's I Stole Your Love opens the album with a taut burst of Kissisms and some machine gun-like drumming from Peter Criss. Stanley recorded a demo of the song, which reportedly varied little from the finished product, and he shares lead guitar work with Ace Frehley on the track. It's a snappy, top-notch album opener. Next up is Christine 16, and despite lyrical material that is downright offensive to modern ears, it remains one of Kiss's best-known tracks. Listen to producer Eddie Kramer's Barrel House Piano, which kicks the melody through the goalposts. Mm-hmm. The song was released as a preview single from Love Gun on June 1, 1977, and became a top 40 hit, peaking at number 25. Gene worked with the then unknown Van Halen brothers, guitarist Eddie and drummer Alex, on demos for Love Gun, including Christine 16, Have Love Will Travel, which would later become Got Love for Sale, and Tunnel of Love. Kiss liked the word love. In the book History, Gene recalled, "I would usually go in and play all the instruments myself, but on this occasion, I decided to call up the Van Halen brothers and ask them to come down and play. So both Alex and Eddie came down and played on the cut Christine 16, Got Love for Sale, and Tunnel of Love, which later wound up on my solo record. We cut it as a live trio, and Eddie came up with some great solos afterwards. I liked his solo for Christine 16 so much that when the band recorded it for Love Gun, Ace pretty much copied Eddie's solo, note for note." And speaking of Got Love for Sale... The next song is considered by some fans the pinnacle of the Kiss era, showing just how evolved, how polished, and how effective their rock and roll could really be. And the source was slightly unexpected. Ace Frehley's Shock Me captured the down-to-the-bone street rock and roll they had been chasing since Paul and Gene began playing together in New York City in 1970. The song was inspired by an incident in Florida in 1976 when Ace was electrocuted on stage. His vulnerable, yearning vocal matched the live-wire guitars and Chris's sternum-shaking drum fills perfectly. The song was a milestone for Ace and hinted at what might happen if the band ever decided to, put out solo albums one day. Side one of Love Gun closes with Tomorrow and Tonight. It's an attempt to come up with another classic Kiss stomper like Shattered Out Loud or Rock and Roll All Night, but an effort that ultimately falls short.
Come on!
the book Behind the Mask by David Leaf and Ken Sharp, Paul Stanley is quoted as saying about Tomorrow and Tonight, there were elements in Tomorrow and Tonight that actually came from Mott the Hoople. There's a Mott the Hoople song called Golden Age of Rock and Roll. I liked that, so there was some of that song in it. And there was also one of those, let me see if I can write another rock and roll all night. You usually can't write two of the same song and have them both be great. Before we flip Love Gun over and get into side two, here's an important message from all of us at Suburbs Pod.
If you're glad or sad or high, call the Suburban Party Line.
612-440-1984. Side 2 kicks off with the title track, a tune that was instantly a concert staple. Stanley fashions a set of truly dumb lyrics out of a single juvenile metaphor, yet somehow the backing vocals manage to lessen the need to cringe. Paul, who was widely credited with playing bass on this track, made a demo of Love Gun, complete with female backing vocalists. Paul and Gene would often make demos and bring fairly finished versions into the studio when Kiss was recording. There's an incendiary guitar riff at the 220 mark that ratchets up the rock an extra notch. Hooligan was written by Peter Criss and his longtime friend and collaborator Stan Penridge. Let's turn to author Julian Gill once again. Hooligan, Gill writes, was almost autobiographical for Peter, recounting situations similar to those he'd experienced in his youth. According to Stan, that actually began in the studio in the midst of a conversation. Peter was talking about his grandmother. I can't remember about what, but I remember him saying that she called him a hooligan. 5 minutes later, we were laying down the rhythm tracks. I played bass and guitar. Peter sang and played drums. He was really playing that night. And hey, for a guy who can't even spell his name, it's kind of amazing he managed to stay in school until he was 22. But at least the hooligan is human.
I
That's Almost Human, which breaks up Side 2 in much the same way that Got Love for Sale does on Side 1. It's a ready-made vehicle that served to propel Gene's flirtations with the monster movie vibe of his true hero, Lon Chaney. Another Gene track is up next. This one's significantly more notable than Almost Human. Blaster Caster, a song which oozes 70s rock and roll lifestyle. The tune is named for Cynthia Plaster Caster, who made her name memorializing rock stars. In the aforementioned book, Behind the Mask, Cynthia says the following about Gene's song. Initially, when I heard about the song, I was not thrilled because I had never intended to cast Kiss. I felt that in writing the song, Gene was sending out the message to the world that he had been cast, or that I should do him. I wasn't that much of a Kiss fan. Over the years, the song has grown on me. It's very catchy. I'm a sucker for catchy tunes. And yeah, it is kinda catchy. The final song on the album is a head-scratching cover of Then He Kissed Me. Originally cut by the Crystals, the song, produced by Phil Spector, was initially released as a single on Philly's Records in July 1963. The evocative, charming tune was a top 10 hit on both sides of the Atlantic. The song was reworded to the title Then I Kissed Her and released by the Beach Boys on their 1965 album Summer Days and Summer Nights. And then Kiss got involved. As you can hear, Kiss were not the Beach Boys, and Eddie Kramer was not Brian Wilson. It's a strange way to end an album of ripping rock and roll. According to Gil, on some test pressings of Love Gun, a song called See You Baby actually took the place of Then She Kissed Me. Ah, if they only used that test pressing to make Love Gun. Love Gun entered the charts, where it was joined in the company of Alive, Destroyer, and Rock and Roll Over. The first of these two albums actually started to climb the charts again in the wake of Love Gun's release. This was the second time the band had four albums on the chart simultaneously. On the subsequent tour, Cheap Trick would be the opening act, though Styx would open the final few dates of the schedule that year. Here is some interesting ephemera about the record. The album cover was painted by Ken Kelly, the same artist who painted the cover of Destroyer. As some of you might know, included in the original pressings of the album was a paper gun that made a popping sound when pulled. The inner sleeve was full color with Kiss spelled out against a green marble background in what appeared to be blood. And speaking of blood, a few months after the release of Love Gun, Marvel Comics issued number one in a series called Marvel Comics Super Specials. The first volume centered on Kiss and reportedly used an ink made from the band members' actual blood.
So cool, man.
So there you have it, listener. Love Gun, the final coherent and cohesive statement from the original and best era of Kiss. Following the release of Alive 2 in October of 1977, no new music would be issued by the members of Kiss until September 18, 1978, a date that will live in infamy. That's when each member of the band released a solo album, and the original Kiss would forever be just a memory. Stay tuned for tomorrow's episode when we discuss the band's immediate response to the lavish production on Destroyer, the Back to Basics album Rock and Roll Over. For more information on Suburbs Pod, visit suburbspod.com. Suburbs Pod uses Gibson guitars and Pearl drums because they want the best.